Spirit, draw near. Our next song is Gaudeamus Hodie. Translated means, let us, celebrate lovingly or something like that. Anyway, it's let us be joyous today. There we go. Yeah. Let us be joyous today. Say this, Gaudeamus. Right. And we've sung it before, I think most of us.
I can play this.
You want to play it? Go ahead. We've sung this one quite a few times. I hear folks like it, so we'll sing it again. Good morning. Gaudeamus Hodie, Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus Hodie, Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus Hodie, Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus Hodie, Hodie. One more time. Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus Hodie, Gaudeamus, Gaudeamus Hodie, Gaudeamus, 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 Hodie, Hodie. And next we'll sing Come, Come, Whoever You Are. We're going to skip the Spanish this morning. And we'll sing it in English twice through.
What number is that?
188. Please be seated.
Good morning.
Welcome
to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Joy Heft. I welcome you into this community of love, a community that knows that love is messy, difficult, sometimes painful, and often wonderful. Here we explore love in its many facets so that we may learn to love the world more. For we know that what the world needs is more loving minds and thinking hearts. The world needs compassion and understanding. The world needs us. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, those who are first-time visitors. I'm sure we have a lot today. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let us know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 years old, and those doors, out these doors and to the left. At the back we have a spirit table. I guess we're moving the
spirit. We currently have a spirit chair. That's from when we were still out there.
Sorry. Oh, we have a spirit chair. I think it's still out there, actually. But you're invited to go to the chair anytime during the service for all ages. We welcome everyone to this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. I don't think we have any announcements. Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Hello to the brave crew who decided to travel through difficult weather. We've heard calls from folks living far away who said, you know, we tried, we're not coming out. So I want to thank you for coming out, those of you who braved the weather. And let us offer our blessings that all who are out in this weather are safe and have all that they need. Just a couple of announcements. Next Sunday at 9 a.m., there will be a meeting of those involved with Force Saturday. This is to talk about how to organize Force Saturday for the future. There's some questions about things like we're having a hard time having enough people to lead it month after month. And a question about whether we continue with a hot lunch or do a cold lunch or even just give away the items that are much needed. So if you're interested in learning more or being in that conversation, we will meet in Emerson Place next Sunday at 9 a.m. I will be out of town for the weekend at the end of February for about a week. I will be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then I'll be in Indianapolis, Indiana, visiting family. As always, I'll be available via phone or anything, but if you have things that you need to talk to me about before the beginning of March, you might want to get on my calendar soon. Want to put a bug in your ear that Regional Assembly is coming up. It will be in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the end of April, the last weekend of April. This will be a great time to go visit the McCoys and to attend our Regional Assembly and get to meet Unitarian Universalists from all around the Midwest and the Prairie region. So if you're interested in that or would like some financial assistance to attend, please let me know and we will see what we can do to make sure you can get there. Also, because the March 1st registration for housing for General Assembly is coming up, I'll mention that General Assembly is the last week of June each year. This year it's in Columbus, Ohio, so it's fairly close. It's easy to get to. And I comment that, you know, General Assembly is one of those things that's kind of like Mecca. You should go at least once in your lifetime. So if you find you're able to attend General Assembly this year, I highly encourage it. It's a worthwhile experience. And with that, we begin our... Oh, yes, thank you. This Wednesday at noon, we'll have a Lenten service here at the church. I will be preaching. Each of the ministers are preaching at their own congregations this year. And then following that service, there will be a lunch. It's $5, I believe. And that's for soup and some additional items here. That money goes to the church. And the money collection at the worship service is given to Oasis Center, Crisis Center for Women, and the food pantry. So hopefully you can join us for that event as well. And with that, we begin this morning's service with a prelude.
a reading for our opening words by Eric A. Heller Wagner. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life. It is a fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, and the fire of faith. It is a fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the diving glow in every life.
As Alex lights our chalice this morning, please join me in reciting our offertory, or our chalice lighting. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Make sure that's at least halfway open, please. I invite you to please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing our hymn of the month, the song in your heart. This is not in your hymnal, so you'll have to follow along on the screen. We'll sing it twice through. Teresa, it's not in the hymnal. It's the one that I... Yes, there we go.
Listen to the song in your heart. Listen to the song in your heart. A song of love, everyone has a part. Listen to the song. Listen to the song in your heart. Listen to the song in your heart. A song of love, everyone has a part. Listen to the song.
If you forgive me, is this on? Is this on? Should be. Can folks hear me? Yeah? Okay. I'm going to apologize for the cough drop in my throat. The medicines that I'm on has my throat a little dry, so I want to be able to speak okay. And actually, Michael, can you just leave it halfway open? It should just be halfway open. Thank you. Who has heard of William Greenleaf Elliott? Who was William Greenleaf Elliott? He's the founder of the Unitarian Church in St. Louis. What else do you know about him? He founded George Washington University, that's right, in St. Louis. At the time, it was a polytechnic institute. Washington University. He founded what? Uh-huh. Anything else you know about him?
He established the
He assisted in establishing a public education system in St. Louis. He came up the river to preach here on occasion. Yes. Anything else you know about him? Yes, he is. Along with most of his family, I've visited that site. He's buried in Bell Fountain Cemetery, which is just south of Calvary Cemetery. All right. How many of you knew most of that besides Mary? Okay. Some, yes, no. So William Greenleaf Elliott is from the East Coast. He was working in Washington, D.C. when he married his wife. What's his wife's name? Abigail. Often referred to as Abby locally, a much beloved woman in the community. She had 14 children, of which 5 survived to adulthood. So she had a very difficult life, and so did Greenleaf Elliott. But they were pillars in the St. Louis community, and when he was in Washington, D.C., he kept seeing these addresses go by that said, addressed to St. Louis near Alton, which is important to remember because Alton at that time was the big city and St. Louis was the backwoods place to be, right? Which is a little opposite what I have been told about how it is today. I keep hearing St. Louis is the big city and Alton is the backwoods place to be. I haven't really lived that, but definitely I think people here believe that story. Yeah? It's come to be something that's believed very deeply. The thing is William Greenleaf Elliott kept preaching here. He preached once, and that brought the congregation to start forming. And then they had a couple of guest speakers. And then Lovejoy happened, and he was killed. And not long after that, the person who was coordinating the congregation at that time, Dr. Emerson, passed away. And for about 20 years, there was only 2 or 3 members who would meet occasionally at somebody's house. And every once in a while, William Greenleaf Elliott would come up and he'd preach. And it'd grow up a little bit. And then it'd die down again. And it went through the cycle. And part of the reason it went through the cycle is because of the conservative world that these folks lived in. Because they were believed to be heretics. Have any of you been called heretics? I know I have. Or maybe, you know, that Unitarian Universalism, that's a cult. Anybody been told you're a part of a cult? Right? That's been going on for a good 200 years. It's not anything new, and it's certainly embedded in the history of this church, not just Unitarian Universalism. What's interesting, though, is that William Greenleaf Elliott was actually not very popular within Unitarianism because he was believed to be too conservative. In fact, he was even too conservative for this church. And so our story this morning is really the story of two churches. First St. Louis and First Unitarian Church of Alton. Both great congregations, great strong histories, with very different experiences around justice work and the justice work that we do. What was the great issue for this congregation, for Unitarians in the 1800s, particularly in the middle of the 1800s. Slavery, abolition, right? Now, William Greenleaf Elliott preached in St. Louis and here in Alton, a kind of middle-of-the-road version. He did not support abolition, strictly. He thought that slaves needed to be free, not necessarily because they were inherently worthy of freedom, but because it was good for the souls of the people who owned them. That it would hurt their souls if they kept owning slaves and using slaves. And even preaching that middle of the road thing, about half of his congregation got up and left and never returned to the church again because they thought he supported abolition. Here in Alton, same thing happened, except that in this congregation, there was much more of a willingness to support fully abolition, so much so that we even have some connections with the Underground Railroad in that history, right? Here's the thing that I know. Both of those churches, St. Louis and Alton, had a commitment to loving one another and to caring for each other as each other's neighbors. And yet this one issue
was so divisive that it was easy to forget the place of love in one's life. Does that sound at all familiar today? History keeps repeating itself. And St. Louis finds itself, St. Louis metro area finds itself yet again at the heart of a racial story. The story of people who are African American and who are Caucasian and people from all walks of life. And how we respond to that varies from community to community. But in all of it, the thing that we hold at the heart, the core value of what we do, is love. Now, First Unitarian Church St. Louis, Elliot, even Alton, has lost members because we, the ministers of our denomination, preach that we need to be paying attention to race, that we need to listen to the voices of people who are experiencing racism, and that we need to support Black Lives Matter. There are people who just refuse to come to church because they think I talk about race too much. There are members here, sitting even here in this room right now, who think I don't talk about race enough. For me, I don't care if I'm talking about racism in St. Louis too much or not enough. What I care about is, are we living our values of love and life? Now, William Greenleaf Elliott, he may have not been fully for abolition, but the core of his life and the thing that his members always knew was that he loved them no matter what. He loved them no matter what. And even in his later life, as his wife was able to begin to convince him to think about abolition in a different way, it was guided by his faith and the faith that his family followed, that said that God believes in universal love and does not support original sin. And at the heart of all of our justice work, from that time into this day, we say, we do this work because we love all people. Because all people have the light of God or the holy or divinity in them, and they are worthy of our love. So you, sitting here in these pews, that's some of your history, your legacy. And as we talk today about the importance of love and justice, we're going to talk about the importance of legacy in the African American community. How there's a sense of history. But the truth is, for any of us to become truly good activists, and when I say activists, I mean activists for love, for grace, and for change, we have to have a sense of legacy for all that is good in our history and all that is difficult. We have to own it all for it to be one coherent song. May your life be as a song. One coherent song that guides us ever towards loving one another fully and with grace. May it be so. I'm gonna go out there and tell them in a minute. So the title of the sermon today is Justice is What Love Looks Like in Public, and we'll be hearing the full quote later. How many of you have seen Cornel West speak? Or even online is fine, yeah, absolutely. He has some amazing books. In particular, the one of his that I love the most is his autobiography. And he talks about himself being a blues man. And part of why he talks about being a blues man is because the blues is grounded in that complicated, messy history that is an African American's history. That blues is something that's inherited from the gospel songs, from the soul songs of slaves, from those who survived into the Jim Crow era, who survived lynching, who survived all of this violence. And the thing that is interesting as he tells his story is that he tries to hold love for all people. He talks about a moment when he gets a call from Rush Limbaugh. Now, I want you to think for a minute what you would do if you got a call from Rush Limbaugh. Now, here is an African-American man who is one of the greatest minds of his time. And Rush Limbaugh is calling him because he wants to have a real debate, an honest debate about race. And he has called every university he can, and no one will say yes. That surprised any of us here? I know I would have a hard time agreeing to that. And Cornel West said, yes, of course, Brother Rush. Imagine hearing him saying that. Of course, Brother Rush, I will have a debate with you about race that is authentic and reasoned. And they kept trying to schedule it, and they couldn't. And he said, the one thing that I noticed is in all the years that Rush Limbaugh has been speaking, he has never once said anything mean about me, and the only time he's ever said anything about me on his radio show is when he agreed with me. What that is about is authentic relationship. And for Dr. West, at the core of all things is that direct, authentic relationship. He treated Rush Limbaugh like a human being. He was kind, he was present. And Rush Limbaugh didn't forget that. I don't know if I could have been as calm or as kind. I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, I preach it all the time, but I don't know if I could be that calm or that kind. If Trump were to call me today, I would struggle, but I would try, right? And really, that's all we're asked of, is to try and be loving, to accept the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no matter what buttons they push, to understand that we are interdependent with each other, no matter whether we like the person in the next joint in the web or not. We don't get to say who we get to be in this sacred community with. When Dr. West talks about being a blues man, he means even those low, sour, difficult notes. He means the entire music is important. The wonderful high moments and the difficult lows and all of the notes in between, and everything is a part of it. On Friday night, we had our race and film series and watched the movie Do the Right Thing. If you have not seen Do the Right Thing, I highly encourage you to. It is one of the greatest films of its time. Spike Lee created this film against much critique, against many of the Hollywood greats telling him he shouldn't make it, it was too political or whatever, and it was because at that time, late 1980s, there had been a string of deaths of African-American men by police officers. Sound familiar? In fact, part of why there was so much anger about Eric Garner is because there had been so many similar deaths of young black men in the 1980s. In this case, Do the Right Thing was written in response to the death of Howard Beach, who had been chased out of a pizzeria, an Italian pizzeria, in his home area, and as he ran into the street, he was hit by a car. And if you'll leave that halfway open when you go, please, thank you. And he told that story because people needed to hear it. And the great thing about Do the Right Thing is he doesn't try to take a stance. It is a messy movie. And there is no sense that, you know, the police were right or the African Americans were right or the Italians were right or any of that. Please do not close the door. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you. What he was doing was adding to that blues song. How many of you listen to blues? Enjoy listening to it? It's one of those kinds of music that has great highs and great lows. And Do the Right Thing is a beautiful tapestry of art that goes with the high and wonderful moments and the difficult lows and the weird moments in between. At the end of the film, it's hard to know if the young black man and the older Italian man will continue being in relationship together or not. It seems like they might, but it also seems like they might not. It's that kind of messiness. And that's kind of how I feel about our race conversations in this day and age, right? They're messy. It's hard to know where we're going to end up. There's lots of emotion, anger, and frustration, and disappointment, and all these things coming into it. But it's like a blues song. It has meaning. and it goes right to the soul, and it has range, and we create it together in harmony. Justice is what love looks like in public. Love is inherently a relationship between people. And for love to be valued, it needs to be done in healthy relationship. Now, that doesn't mean you accept violence or abuse. There's healthy boundaries in a loving relationship. What we're saying when we say justice is what love looks like in public, it means that we need to be in relationship. Too often I hear folks who have no relationship with the African American community espousing opinions about how that community acts. Even worse, I hear people say, I know one person who disagrees with the African American community, and so therefore I'm right. Instead of recognizing that the African American community is not a monolithic agreement of everything, but has differing opinions. And yet they struggle and they work and they live in relationship with each other. Because the foundation of that is loving connection. And so as you're going forth and listening to these conversations and these difficult things that are going on around race in St. Louis, in Ferguson, particularly in light of the recent decision about not supporting the indictment, and now the federal government suing Ferguson about not being willing to indict police officers, of parents still struggling with the death of and no resolution for their children's deaths. As we're living into a world where folks aren't sure whether we should be saying Black Lives Matter, in the face of a time when more than half of the congregations that put up Black Lives Matter signs have experienced vandalism and violence, we need to remember it's a song. It requires us to be in relationship. And part of the struggle is encouraging our politicians to be in that relationship. The thing that disturbs me again and again in places like Ferguson is when the key leaders refuse to be in relationship with the people having concerns. Love is about relationship, and good justice work is about relationship. So may we be in healthy relationship, even with the Trumps of our lives, even with the Justice Scalias of our lives. May he rest well with his maker. May we know that it's our heart, our messy, difficult, complicated hearts that make justice meaningful and grounding. It's our patience with each other and with the world. May it be so.
Please join in our responsive reading, which is on the wall. We envision a world where your life and safety is tied to mine. We envision a world where language is used for wholeness and liberation.
Because what we say has power.
We envision a world where your liberation is linked to my liberation.
Because we are interconnected.
We envision a world where voting will be an empowering event. We envision a world where war and violence will be considered reprehensible.
Because dehumanizing others.
We envision a world where creation, ingenuity, discomfort, and compassionate criticism will be welcomed.
Because we need these things to grow.
We envision a world where all are valued, loved, and respected. We envision a world where all living beings will have access to clean water, fresh food, shelter, beauty, love.
Because our bodies, hearts, minds, and souls depend on it.
We envision a world where fear will be recognized as an emotion and not as an authority. We envision a world where humans think ahead and consider impact on future generations.
Because their lives depend on
it. We envision a world where respect for the earth is as important as respect for oneself and one's community.
We do these things
because they matter, because our lives depend on all, because all of our lives depend on it.
Each week we take some time to recognize the joys and sorrows, celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls around the room and placing them in the cleansing waters of this community here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through our thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have a joy, sorrow, celebration, or struggle you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. We place a stone in the bowl for those joys and sorrows lying in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, and for those who cannot be with us in community today. I invite you to join me in a time of meditation or prayer. And I invite you to take a deep breath in, and as you breathe out, I invite you to make a noise starting at the highest part of your range and going down. I invite you to join in breathing in and out. Ooh. And as we do this the next time, I want you to feel the resonation from your nose going down into the base of your stomach as you do that. Just put all of your tension into that feeling. And so breathing in and out. Ooh. One more time, in and out. As we bring ourselves into this awareness of what is in this moment, both imperfect and perfect, we hold in our hearts love for ourselves, particularly love for our bodies, which takes so much struggle, which get us from place to place, which is our only home from birth to death. For those times when our body causes us pain or fear, even those times when it might feel like it's turned against us, may we offer forgiveness and may we love ourselves fully and wholly, knowing that we are beautiful and enough just as we are. And with our loving minds, we open our minds to this amazing world. May we hold back the critic
listening with love, knowing that we do not have to accept all that we hear, nor do we need to counter it every time we hear it. May we listen for the loving wisdom within ourselves and within all others, particularly those with whom we may struggle. May we always remember we teach best what we most need to learn, and see in our imperfections and the imperfections of others, not problems to be fixed, but opportunities for growth and transformation. And for our hearts, too often broken open, may they be broken open to hold more love in, rather than broken into pieces that can't hold nothing at all. May we know our hearts are big enough to take what faces us, and when they are not, all of the hearts of this community are with them, for we need not face our trials alone. And for those things that lift our hearts way into the sky and above and beyond our awareness, may we offer our gratitude and our grace. And for the spirits of our lives, for the allness of all and the ultimate and all that beyond our awareness, may we be grateful, may we be committed. May we offer our compassion, our care, and all the forms of love in the best ways possible. I invite you now into a few moments of silent meditation, prayer, or contemplation. And as we come back into the space, may we offer blessings to all those in times of war, those running from violence in need of homes and loving spaces, and for all who need a little grace, a little patience, a little compassion, may they know they are not alone. May we know we are not alone. And taking in a deep breath and out. And one more time in. And out. And one more silent breath in. And out. I invite you to join in singing our meditation hymn, Spirit of Life.
Each week, we participate in a spiritual practice of giving to this community a portion of the financial resources that we receive. We do this in hope that these gifts will bring blessings to the world. We do this remembering that love can guide how money is used in the world. We give to this community so that love can spread to each of us and into the community. We give because we care and wish the message of love without creeds is needed by our ever dogmatic world. This week's offering will be lovingly received. May it be lovingly given.
I invite you to join me in the offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
A reading from the book Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud by Dr. Cornel West. The lessons taught by my elders, the same lesson, in fact, that their elders taught them, was that love is the core of it all. The rest is just sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. To come from a people who were denigrated, enslaved, and despised, and still place love in the center of life is to be a part of a miracle. My conclusion became my calling, that justice is what love looks like in public, just as deep democracy is what justice looks like in practice. When you love your people, when you love people, you hate the fact that they're being treated unjustly. Justice is not simply an abstract concept to regulate institutions, but also a fire in the bones to promote the well-being of all.
Can everybody hear me better? There we go. Democracy is love acted out. I want you to stand up if you're under the age of 18, imagine you're 18 for a moment. You were allowed to vote in this coming election. So if you would be 18 in your imagination or present, please stand. If it were 1960 and you were allowed to vote, please stand. 1960, women could vote.
Theoretically.
No, I'm not saying you were born then. This is all hypothetical. Pretty much everybody in this room should be standing up right now. Okay, 1910. All the women should be seated about now. Okay. Yeah, men can stand, women can sit down. And if there were people of color in this room, they would all be seated as well. If in 1890 you were allowed to vote, and in this group would be if your family is Italian, Irish, or any of the Eastern Europeans, you need to take a seat. You notice some of the men are sitting down. Now, if you happen to own your own property or serve in public office, you can stay standing, otherwise be seated. These are the people who would have been able to vote in 1800. Please be seated. Phil and Phil, it's all up to you. Exactly. How the world has changed, right? And for me, in my humble opinion, it's because we've gotten better at practicing that love known as democracy. We've gotten better at it. And it's because we've gotten better at living justice out loud. Women said, we want to vote. And through hard work, and believe me, it was not something that was agreed upon. Even William Greenleaf Elliott, who was very liberal for his time, believed women's job was to stay at home and to tend the children, because that's what the Bible said. In fact, the Bible also said that slaves are supposed to do the same thing. But we started to recognize through love, loving relationship, that's not tenable. And eventually we started to recognize that for people of color. We still got a long way to go, though. For example, it is still perfectly legal in the state of Illinois for you to fire me just because I'm transgender. It's perfectly legal in the state of Missouri to be kicked out of my housing because I'm transgender, or for any of our members who are lesbian or gay to be kicked out for the same reason, unless their city or county specifically says otherwise. But what I know about love is that if I love someone, I want to know they have a safe place to live. If I love someone, I want to know they have access to the means to get what they need. If I love someone, I make sure that they have the food that they need. If I love someone, I don't care if they're a drug addict or an alcoholic, if they've committed a crime, or they're the most fundamentalist Republican in the world, because that's my bias, right? My bias to work on. They deserve to be treated with inherent worth and dignity. and our democratic process has a long way to go to getting to that point. So I say to you, justice is what love looks like in public. Democracy is what love looks like in public. As I was saying last week, our principles are inherently about that love, that messy, difficult love that angers us and frustrates us and makes us concerned and uncertain. If you don't feel a little wobbly about your love, you have a little bit of work to do. Because love inherently invites us into those messy places. Just like that blues note that hangs in the air and quivers and suddenly goes up and feels a little off, and then it goes down and it feels a little off and then hits into that harmonized note of connectedness. That is the work we have to do. So may you live your life as a song, a harmonized, complex tune that ever encourages you into deeper and deeper relationship, particularly with those whom you may not always have understanding, and particularly with those you may not always see in your day-to-day lives. May our justice be democratic and whole and ever improving, because love is also learning. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and sing in our closing hymn, Standing on the Side of Love. And this is one of those clap on the twos kind of songs, and it's one of those bop around songs. Twos and fours.
Whatever you do, don't do what Alex does.
The promise of the Spirit, faith, hope, and love abide, and so every soul is blessed and made whole. The truth in our hearts is our guide. We are standing on the side of love, hands joined together, as hearts beat as one, emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim, we are standing on the side of love. Sometimes we build a barrier to keep love wholly bound, corrupted by fear, unwilling to hear, denying the truth we found. We are standing on the side of love, hands joined together, as hearts beat as one, emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim, we are standing on the side of love. A bright new day is dawning, when love will not divide. Reflections of grace in every embrace, reviving our beauty revived. We are standing side of love, hands joined together, as hearts beat as one, emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim, we are standing on the side of love. We are standing on the side of love.
to turn across the aisle, across the chandelier, I'm sorry. Getting back into our new space. Take a look around, isn't this amazing painting job?
Wow.
It looks lovely, right?
There's no ugly mark on
here. No ugly mark, yeah. And they even dusted the chandelier last Sunday. Thank you to everybody who helped volunteer with cleaning the space up. Welcome to this lovely place, this sacred home, and to all who are gathered here. Look around this room, for these are the people with whom we practice that justice, that democracy, that love, where we need not all agree on everything to be in community, but where we do need all to care and to trust and to live in grace. We will not always like each other, but we may always love each other. May you go in peace this day, living love into the world and sharing that light divine. Blessed be. Our worship is ended. Let our service begin.